Welcome, everyone. This is the Christmas Spectacular episode of True Crime All the Time. This episode should drop right before Christmas, so hopefully some of you out there are listening to it right now on some new fancy phone or tablet, maybe a computer that you just opened. But either way, Gibby and I want to wish everyone a very Merry Christmas. Isn't that right, Gibby?
It is. Hope everybody's having a great one.
Hey folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. So we've got a few shout outs for this episode. Jordan in Texas sent us an email claiming that she is our biggest fan. Jordan is also the one that made the very funny meme of Alton Coleman mentioning...
Loved it.
Yeah, it was funny.
Yeah, it was funny.
Mentioning don't accept candy or Frankfurters.
Frankfurters.
So you know she was listening closely. You can see that on our Facebook page, or if you follow us at TC All The Time on Twitter.
Thanks, Jordan. I really love the meme.
Yeah, it was great.
Really cool, and Merry Christmas to you.
Yeah, definitely. So I've got two more shout-outs, Roberta and Annie. And these are actually second-time shout-outs. And that's because they are our very first donators on our Patreon page. If you have not been out to the Patreon page, please visit it. You can get there through our website at truecrimeallthetime.com. Look for the Patreon button. And if you click on that, it'll take you straight to the Patreon page. We're adding new content all the time. And there's some content on there that is available to Patreon only supporters, but you can support the show for as little as $2 a month. You know, I want to sound like Sally Struthers, but that is far less than a cup of coffee a month, right? So less than one Starbucks a month, you can help support the show. If you're using iTunes, please go out and take the time to rate the podcast. You can write a review as well if you want. You know, if you love the show, it's a great way to help support us. And it gets us out there and seen by our rating. So we appreciate that. So as I mentioned, this is our Christmas Spectacular. And what Gibby and I thought we would do is, instead of focusing on one crime or serial killer or murder, we would go through and give our favorite Christmas crimes. We'll go back and forth, taking turns, talking about them. Is that right, Gibbs?
It is right.
Do I have that right?
Yeah.
All right. You want me to start?
Well, you look like you really want to get going. I can tell.
I'm jumping.
Yeah.
Jumping at the chance. All right. So I'll start. I'm going to talk about the Covina Massacre. So this is 2008.
So you're going to be a little on the light side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to jump out the gate with really gruesome ones.
Yeah, so let's start with a mask. Yeah, okay.
Sorry. We may have some funny ones in here. This is not one of them.
Yeah,
at all.
They can't wait for me to get in because I got a funny one.
Right. So we'll go back and forth. We don't want to make it too dark all the time. We gotta bring a little lightness to it. But this one is dark, unfortunately. So it's Christmas Eve night, and around 11:30 p.m., a man named Bruce Pardo, who had rented a Santa suit at a local costume shop. He puts on the Santa suit and he heads over to a party that's being held at his former in-law's place. So at this point, you know, we know that Bruce is no longer married, and my assumption is he's not invited to this party, right?
Right.
But he's going to head over anyway. The problem is that Bruce is bringing presents, and normally that's not a problem, but the presents that Bruce is bringing include a homemade flamethrower.
Sweet.
I don't know how you make a flamethrower.
How you get one of those?
I mean, you can.
Can you buy them?
I don't know. This says it was homemade. He actually made this flamethrower.
He put this together.
Wow. And on top of that, he had 4 9-millimeter handguns.
Well, nothing wrong with that. Got to have your handgun ready.
Nothing wrong with having handguns. What he's going to do with them, that is definitely something wrong. So Pardo enters the home, and right away he starts shooting at random. I mean, he's probably got a gun. I'm picturing like a Tarantino type film, gun in each hand,
dropping the clips and grabbing the next two.
Right. He runs in, he starts shooting at random. Unfortunately, right off the bat, he shoots an 8-year-old girl. Mm. And this girl, what is sad about this part is, I think this was his niece on his ex-wife's side.
Wow.
And she's actually excited to see him when he comes in the door.
Right.
So she's running to greet him, and he shoots her.
That's sad.
So, you know, horrible. He ends up shooting many, many members of his ex-wife's family. And then he uses the makeshift flamethrower that we talked about to basically set the whole place on fire. In the end, 9 people are killed by either gunshot wounds or flames. And this includes his ex-wife and former in-laws. Besides the 9 that were killed, 3 others were wounded. So the 8-year-old girl was shot in the face, but she lived. So that's a bright side of the story.
Right.
She had severe injuries, but they were not life-threatening. A 16-year-old girl was shot in the back, and a 20-year-old woman suffered a broken ankle while she was jumping out of the window trying to get away from this guy. One of the survivors called the authorities during the attack. After escaping, police come and the fire and rescue come. And it was said that the fire that resulted from this flamethrower soared as high as 50 feet in the air.
Wow.
Like, I don't know if he had gasoline or what, but it went up quick. And it took 80 firefighters an hour and a half to put this fire out. So it was pretty substantial. Because the fire was so intense, the only way that they could identify the victims was by dental and medical records. So it doesn't stop there though, right? So he's committed the deed.
Right.
But he gets away. The police don't get there to get him. So Pardo gets out of the Santa outfit and he puts on some street clothes. And he drives a rental car to his brother's house. And it was about 30 miles away. It's at his brother's house where he would ultimately die from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. So no, his brother wasn't there at the time. So
he leaves the scene, changes clothes, goes back to his brother's house.
And shoots himself.
Nobody's there. And then that's where he decides to shoot himself.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure why obviously he's not right in the head at this point, or he wouldn't have done any of the things that he's doing.
Yeah, right.
He had purchased an airplane ticket on Air Canada, so it was thought that his initial plan was to flee to Canada. It was ultimately discovered that his flight itinerary was actually from Los Angeles to Moline, Illinois. You notice how I said Illinois?
Well, make sure you say it right, you know.
And not Illinois.
Now, come on.
So he had, Pardo had called a high school friend a couple of days before to say, hey, I'm going to come out and visit you. So that's what ultimately they said that why he was going to Moline.
That's so, really a
crazy story.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. That's the only other thing that I had on that was, you know, he did suffer some third degree burns, which I guess to be expected, he's using a flamethrower to, you know, try to melt down this house basically. But when police find him after he shot himself, they find $17,000 in cash on him inside a girdle. I don't know why he's wearing a girdle, but
yes,
I guess that's where he's hiding his $17,000. They find the rental car that he had let, you know, parked at his brother's house, and they find the Santa suit. Obviously, they find all a bunch of handguns, and I think they recovered 200 rounds of ammunition. And then when they go to his home, they find something else, which is described in some of the readings as a virtual bomb factory.
Really?
Yeah. So this guy had been planning this for a long time. You know, obviously he made the flamethrower.
He was making sure whatever method he used was going to take care of some. Do some serious damage.
Yeah, no doubt. So that was the Covina massacre. It occurred in 2008.
Now, that's a bad Santa.
That is.
Bad Santa. Well, look, so on the lighter side.
We'll go from dark to light.
Yeah. So I just got this short little one here that I just find it funny. You know, it's in our home. Near our hometown, Dayton, Ohio. This is Christmas of 2011. And there's this gentleman named Terry Trent. So he gets wasted on some bath salts.
So I just want to make sure, right? Bath salts is the one that causes people to eat other people's faces off?
They can, you know, sometimes. Yeah, the zombie effect. Or
right. Wasn't that the big story a while, you know, back in a few years ago?
Yeah.
Bath salts cause somebody to eat somebody else's face.
Somebody's
off.
Face, yeah. That's a whole nother podcast.
Sorry.
I think.
Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, well, you know, you're into that zombie stuff, aren't you?
Yeah.
You like shooting them, I think.
I like Walking Dead.
Walking Dead, yeah. So anyway, so this Terry Trent, you know, he is wasted on these bath salts, and he walks in the back door of his neighbor's house, and he just starts to decorate the place for Christmas. I mean, just he's high on bath salts, just decides he's going to, you know, get it all Christmassy.
Well, what else would you do if you're high on bath salts?
Yeah. Well, at least he's not eating anybody's face right now. So yeah. That's good. But so, you know, he lights some candles and, you know, he decorates the house, the coffee table, the kitchen table. He even takes the time and hangs a wreath out on the garage door. And then, of course, he's blaring the TV with some kind of Christmas show on. And he's sitting playing with the toys underneath the Christmas tree that belongs to the kids that live there, right? So they have an 11-year-old boy that he wakes up hearing the noises. And, you know, he goes to his mom's room and wakes her up. And, of course, they look downstairs and they see this strange guy just having a good old time, the house decorated, TV blaring. So, you know, of course, she calls the Dayton police and you can figure out what happens from there. But some guy, just picture this guy, you know, picture coming home, you know, and got some guy high on whatever, you know, sitting underneath your tree, playing with your kids' toys. I just think it's funny, man.
That would not work out well for me.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, what's funny, when you said you were going to do this one, that when this one was on your list, I looked it up, and one of the quotes said, what the hell else are you going to do in Dayton, Ohio?
Yeah.
Which I found that kind of funny.
That's the excitement around
here.
Yeah,
since we live here.
Yeah. So the story of that one is don't do bath salts.
Yeah, are bath salts even around anymore? You used to hear about them.
I don't know.
Years ago, but
I don't think you can buy them at the convenience stores like you used to.
I sure as hell hope not. I don't want anybody eating my face, and I don't want anybody in my living room
playing with your kids'
playing
toys.
With my kids' toys. You know, springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. Springtime also means more time outside and away from home. And I trust SimpliSafe. I love the myriad of features that they offer. And I love the price. SimpliSafe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. The system blankets your whole home in protection. There are so many sensors, from detecting break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, they have a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. So you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. There's no contract, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. SimpliSafe has given Gibby and I and many of our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/TCAT. That's simplisafe.com/TCATT. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. I want to tell everybody about a game that I've been playing recently called Two Dots. You know, primarily, Two Dots is a puzzle-based game. You have to connect at least two dots of the same color to make a move. And then those connected dots are removed from the game area, and the dots above them drop down until they hit other dots or the floor beneath. But there's a variety of game modes. There's this really cool one called Scavenger Hunt, which is a really relaxing hidden object game. There's different levels to the game that are grouped into worlds, and it's very satisfying to move up. There's over 5,000 unique puzzles and fun levels, and with all the different gameplay modes, it really makes the gaming experience unique and exciting with every single puzzle. The visuals are amazing, and the in-game music I found to be very soothing. You can even challenge your friends on Facebook to make it competitive, link up, and see how your dot skills match up. And best of all, it's free to download, and you don't need Wi-Fi to play it. You can play it offline as well. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Download Two Dots now for free on Android or iOS. All right, so I'll go on to what was described as the Santa line slang. So this happened, actually, I don't even have the year, to be honest with you. You know, it was back, I want to say it was in the 80s, and it happened in Cleveland. And 21-year-old Tyrone Howard and his pregnant wife had taken their three sons. And this is where one of the reasons why I like this is because one of the sons is actually Terrence Howard, the actor. So a lot of people will probably recognize Terrence Howard. He's just been in a ton of movies. So this is actually, you know, Terrence Howard is actually one of the three sons that is going to see Santa Claus at Higbee's department store in Cleveland. So they're waiting in line to see Santa Claus. Also waiting in line is 36-year-old Jack Fitzgerald, who had three of his own children, and his wife is pregnant as well. But he's got just his three children with him in line. His pregnant wife is shopping with their oldest daughter. At one point, they get into an argument. So the Tyrone Howard and Jack Fitzgerald are arguing supposedly about one or the other cutting in line. Now, I will say there's a lot of information there's quite a bit of information online about this, but there's a lot of differing stories. So the way I say it may be ambiguous, because as many times you'll hear it said one way or see it said one way, you'll see it said the complete opposite way. But I think this part is pretty, you know, unanimous that they're arguing about one or the other cutting in line. And so an altercation ensues. And what was said in the argument is really what most of the witnesses differed on. And so what was said and who initiated it? That's what, you know, I think a lot of people said it was went one way and a lot of people said it went the other way.
Two sides to every story.
That which there is. But the end result was that Fitzpatrick, who I believe was white, Howard was African American. Fitzpatrick grabbed Howard, pinned him up against the wall, and kneed him in the groin. That part was pretty well substantiated. That was not one of the parts that was differed among the witnesses, but
right.
Somehow Howard's groin begins bleeding, apparently from a previous injury that he'd had. And Howard obviously didn't take kindly to being kneed in the nether regions. And so he uses a sharp object and stabs Fitzpatrick several times in the thighs and the neck, and Fitzpatrick falls to the floor. Howard flees the scene, goes to his mother's home, but hours later he turns himself into the police. Fitzpatrick at this point is taken to a nearby hospital, but he ultimately dies from the wounds that he received. So Howard's charged with second-degree murder. He pleads self-defense at his trial. And this is where it really gets into the he said, she said, because that the Howard side is that Fitzpatrick used a lot of racial slurs against them in the argument.
So a racial hate crime?
Racially motivated altercation, maybe, as much as it was about cutting in line. At least that's what, you know, was alleged at trial. But that was denied by Howard's wife, so which is kind of strange.
Right.
But she did testify that Fitzpatrick made this quote, "Doing things like this has set your race back 5 years." Howard testified that he, you know, had cursed at Fitzpatrick, and that's what led to the altercation after the line cutting. So again, it was really hard to piece this story together because there were so many different versions. Fitzpatrick's widow testified that a security guard had separated the two men at some point when they were having this scuffle.
Right.
But that's when Howard pulled a knife from his jacket and he lunged at Fitzpatrick and, you know, stabbed him multiple times. Howard and his witnesses testified that while Howard was pinned against the wall, a woman handed him a nail file, which he used to stab Fitzpatrick. That would be supporting the self-defense. But the nail file was never recovered, and this supposed woman that had come to his aid with the nail file.
Right.
She was never identified, never came forward, and never testified at trial.
So mystery woman.
Yeah, mystery woman. I don't want to say she was made up, but they could never substantiate the facts about it.
Today they'd have video.
Yeah, TMZ would probably be there.
Right,
at exactly. Some point. So I did read where the jury foreman said that the issue of race did not come up as a factor in the jury room. And after a long deliberation, Howard was convicted of manslaughter. He was originally charged with second degree murder, so they only convicted him of manslaughter. And he received a sentence of 1 to 25 years in prison. And this is the really interesting part, that he was paroled after 11 months for good behavior.
Really?
11 months.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, I personally know people that have been in jail for a lot longer than that and never killed anybody.
For a lesser of a crime.
Yeah. There must've been something there where obviously there was something there for them to give him the lesser charge of manslaughter. And then there was something along with his good behavior that allowed the prison system or made them think that he was a good candidate to be eligible for parole. It is said that he had no previous criminal record, but unfortunately he and his wife divorced shortly after his release from prison. So she waited the 11 months and then...
Then divorced him.
Then divorced him.
Should have divorced him while he was in here.
Yeah.
Yeah. That way he was over it by then.
The reason I picked this one and the why I thought it was so interesting was the Terrence Howard connection.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you got that
famous actor.
Yeah, what's that show he's on?
Is he on Empire?
Empire. Yeah.
I don't watch it, but I think that's the one he's on. He's been in a lot of great movies. He's a great actor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's a A-list.
Yeah, yeah. So, Iron Man. He's been in all the Iron Mans and...
Yeah, he's Iron Man?
Yeah, he's... Maybe not all of them, but he's the... In the very first one, wasn't he the Air Force guy?
I think he was, and then I think that
Don Cheadle takes
over after that.
Sorry, we're getting away from true crime here a little bit.
So the moral to the moral to that story
moral
is walk away.
Walk away.
Yeah, if something happens while you're in line, walk away.
Like a Kenny Rogers song.
Yeah,
there you go.
Want me to sing it?
No, please do not. I don't think anybody wants to hear that on Christmas morning.
You know, if we should have started the podcast out with letting everybody know that if every time you hear Gibby say,
an angel gets its wings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that what you were going to say?
That you have to take a drink.
Oh, drinking game. Christmas drinking game.
Yeah. Sometimes I say a lot, and before the podcast is over, I'm sure you would feel pretty good on this Christmas Eve or Christmas Day.
Pretty little woozy even.
Yeah. So here's a quick little funny thing that happened one Christmas time. And of course, this is not in the United States, but this is just a real quick.
Well, where is it? You got to tell us.
It's in Chile.
Chile?
Chile. Yeah. So anyway, reportedly, this woman told her neighbors that she picked out the best Christmas tree and that, you know, her kids, they were going to have the best holiday ever because of this.
As well they should.
Sure, yeah. So, you know, when the neighbor goes to look at the tree, it turns out what she picked out was just a gigantic cannabis plant. And
on accident or on purpose?
I think she's playing it off as she did it by accident. I mean, I don't know how you get that mixed up with a Christmas tree. But
they look pretty, not that I've seen a lot of cannabis plants in person. I've seen them maybe on TV. But they look very, very different. Now I don't know about Chile.
Maybe Chile, they trim them like a Christmas tree.
I don't know what Christmas trees look like in Chile, but.
So anyway, I just thought it was funny that was one of the stories I read out there.
Well, you can see how we went, right? So I picked a little darker and you obviously went lighter, which makes for good. Yeah. We don't want to be too dark on Christmas. Now, maybe I went too dark.
I do have a little bit of a little darker one, but not too dark.
Okay.
Real quick here. We got some fans down in Kentucky.
Yeah, a lot of fans actually in Kentucky.
Yeah, so this one is in Ashland, Kentucky. No, it's an older one. We're going back to the late 1800s, but I just thought it was for our fans in Kentucky. They need something else to hear besides the UK basketball team all the time winning.
Do not disparage my UK Wildcats.
They got a big game coming up pretty soon, don't they? You know,
yep. They got a bunch of big games coming up.
Every game is important to them.
It is.
So anyway, this is Ashland, Kentucky, and there's a Robert Gibbons. He's 17 years old, amputee. His sister Fanny, 14. And their friend Emma, she's 15. They were asleep, and someone breaks into the Gibbons' house. And very, very early in the morning, they decide to bludgeon them to death. And the method they used was crowbar and an axe.
That can't be a good way to go.
Yeah, I can't imagine crowbar. That has to be
axe. I think you could go pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But if crowbar, it's got a
sharp edge on it, you know.
But crowbar might take a while.
Yeah, that's just
that would not be my method of choice.
No. Not only do they do this, then the killers they go ahead and set the house on fire. And of course, the neighbors, they see the flames and they rush over to try to help, and And they pull the three bodies out, and you know they see that the skulls are smashed to pieces. And later, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it didn't take much to set a house on fire in the 1800s.
No, back then it was probably pretty easy.
You didn't need a homemade flamethrower.
No, not like your one story.
No, they would go up pretty easily, I would imagine.
So the doctor comes and he looks at the bodies and he realizes that the one girl was raped before she was murdered. And ultimately they find three men accused of the crime. And one is George Ellis, one is William Neal, and one is George Kraft. Throughout the trial, later Ellis, you know, he kind of recants his whole confession, but he go ahead, you know, back then they hung you, right? They lynched you.
Oh, they didn't mess around
back
then.
There was no put you in prison for a while, feed you, give you dental, educate you.
Let you appeal for 20 years.
Let you become a lawyer while you're in prison so you can appeal your own case, right? So anyway.
I will say that with the recent cases that have been cropping up where people have been proved innocent by DNA.
Right.
I don't want to say it's a good thing that we don't do that, but it might be a good thing that we don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Because how many people did they hang the next day?
Oh.
And then maybe they even the day after found out some evidence and they were, well, I guess that guy didn't do it.
Yeah, well, they're probably like, well, just
can't take that back.
Yeah, let's just move on, folks. You know, I don't know what they would have done.
But you're right. They did not mess around back in those days.
No. So even though he recanted, they went ahead and lynched him. And then eventually the other two, they were hanged after their trials. Back in 1881. You know, it's just,
what's interesting about that is number one, they had crowbars in 1881.
Right.
But that true crime and murder, it goes back as far as you can.
It's human nature.
It goes back to the beginning of time, right?
Right.
There was a caveman that wanted something. So he took the big rock and he hit the other caveman over the head and killed him.
Goes back to the Bible, man.
Yeah.
Cain and Abel.
It's definitely not new. True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. You know, my wife and I, we both use Rakuten when we shop online to help save money. My wife uses it more than I do because, well, let's face it, she shops more than I do. Rakuten is the most rewarding way to shop and save because members earn cash back on everything that they buy. Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while doing it? It really is a no-brainer. I use it for all my techie stuff at stores like Best Buy. My wife uses it at stores like Sephora and Macy. Best of all, membership is free and it's easy to sign up. It's very easy to use. Cashback rates change daily. So start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up. All right, Gibby, it's my turn, isn't it?
It is.
So I'm going to be talking about the Los Feliz Murder Mansion.
How you say that?
I believe, Los Feliz. So a little shorter than my other ones. This happened in 1959. And this happened at the house of Dr. Harold Perelson, who apparently was a very respected family man. He was a doctor. This is in an area, a very nice area of Los Angeles. At least it was in 1959. I'm not sure about right now. The problem with Dr. Harold Perelson is that he murdered his wife in cold blood on Christmas. So apparently the family had a nice dinner, put the two younger kids to bed. And as soon as that happened, Dr. Perelson went and got a hammer from his garage. He returned to the bedroom and pummeled his wife's head repeatedly.
Jeez.
Yeah. Killed her.
Wow.
His eldest daughter, Judy, must have walked in because she saw what was going on. And then the doctor goes after her. And he's swinging the hammer at her and attacks her, hits her in the head. Luckily, the wound kind of grazes off. You know, it wasn't like a real landing blow.
Right.
But he hit her a couple times, but they were all kind of, you know, grazing type blows. So she was basically just wounded and stunned. She's screaming out, "Don't kill me." And it's her screaming that alerts the neighbors who call the police. So at this point, I never did really find out what drove Dr. Perelson. There was no information that I found that really...
Just being married?
Yeah, it could be. We've all been there at some point. What he does after his oldest daughter gets away and she's screaming, he knows the police are coming. He basically downs a bunch of pills and
bath salts.
And bath salts, which I'm sure they didn't have at that point. But killed himself, and he was dead before the ambulance even arrived. So the good thing about that is it left all of his other children alive.
Right.
His oldest daughter that he attacked didn't die, and he didn't go after any of the two younger kids at all.
And I'm sure mentally they were fine after all this.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they lived just a great life.
Right.
Had no trauma whatsoever.
I'm sure they can't wait for Christmas to come around every year.
Yeah, I really hope they're not listening to this. That would be bad.
I hope not.
But I would feel bad about that.
And you can write Mike Ferguson at True Crime All the Time.
Actually, this murder occurred on December 6th, so...
It was around the holiday.
It was around the pre-holiday season. Why I put it on. But it was interesting enough, but what really capped it for me and why I wanted to put it on the list was that, you know, it was December 6th, but they lived in this big mansion. And that's why I guess it's called the Los Feliz Murder Mansion. But they had the mansion all decked out for Christmas, right? Lights, tinsel, whatever you had in 1959, they had it. They had the Christmas tree up already, and they had all the presents already under the tree. So, I mean, that's pretty early, I guess, yeah. At least in my household, December 6th, to have everything ready. And maybe some families do it like that, but, you know, we wait for Santa to bring our gifts and make sure everything's under the tree, you know, Christmas Eve. What am I talking about? There's no kids listening to this, right? There better not be any kids listening to this, I'm telling you right now. So, as I say, the Christmas tree is up, the presents are wrapped under the tree, and they remain there today.
Really?
Yeah. That's what I find so interesting about this.
That, what do you mean they remain there today?
Like, this house is still there.
Really?
And apparently, from what I read, now I don't know how old what I was reading is, but this has been a destination for visitors interested in the gruesome and the macabre to visit. I don't know who owns it. I don't know who runs it.
So the family said, after all this, don't open those.
I guess.
Leave the presents behind.
Yeah.
That's freaky.
I know it was bought and sold many times over the years.
Right.
But for whatever reason, obviously they must have known what happened there.
Right.
And maybe they bought it to, I don't know.
What state was this in?
It's California.
So California.
Yeah, Los Angeles. So, you know, happened in 1959.
Maybe one of our LA fans.
We do have a lot of listeners in Los Angeles. So if anybody knows about the Los Feliz Murder Mansion, send us an email, because I just thought that was so interesting that they left the presents wrapped, they left the tree up, they left everything for visitors.
I want to know what's in the presents.
That might ruin it. I don't know.
Could be something really cool. Antique-like.
But there's a no trespassing sign. So this is not a...
So the family still owns it, I guess? Or
no, I read that. So I read that it had passed. So it's what's so strange.
So it's somebody's keepsake of brutal crime.
I don't know. If I buy a house and I'm not leaving... A mansion. I'm not leaving that up as a sign that every time I see it, I know a woman was...
I'd like to get that backstory.
Killed by her husband. Even with the no trespassing sign, it's not stopping people from...
walking on the property.
Right, trying to look in windows and view it.
That's an expensive keepsake.
Because people are into that. So what do you got for us?
So...
Can you lighten us up a bit?
I was going to go...
Or go dark.
I was going to keep the dark theme just one more time. Just right. Because, you know, I've got some friends over in Pittsburgh, PA, and I thought they might enjoy just a Christmas murder.
Well, hit them.
So this was go back about 100 years, but I just find it interesting. This was actually at a holiday dinner party.
I thought you were going to say Holiday Inn.
No, yeah, back 100 years ago.
Hotel, the first holiday. Motel, yeah. Holiday Inn.
We won't let them sing, folks. Don't worry.
All right, sorry.
So anyway, it's a holiday dinner party. And there's a young man, John Johnson, his wife, Amy, and they have their friend, Daniel, over. Daniel's wife had a mutual friend named George Castle. And they all gathered together at the Johnson's house, and they were spending a nice evening celebrating Christmas with good food, drink. Eventually, they started airing their past grievances. I guess you did that back then, right? Kind of like the... Christmas, New Year's thing. Talk about your past grievances. Get over them.
Or the Seinfeld episode.
Yeah.
The airing of grievances.
Yeah. What was that called? With the metal pole?
Festivus.
Festivus of the best. Rest
Festivus
of us.
For the rest of us.
Yeah. So anyway, they were airing their grievances with each other. The booze started making its rounds. So about 7 o'clock, after an argument over an old grudge turned a little bitter, Daniel, he grabs a gun and he tries to shoot John Johnson. John's wife, Amy, sees him, that the gun is going to be pointed at her husband. So she leaps into her husband's defense and jumps right in front of him, which she ends up taking the bullet to her right side. Of course, at that point, Daniel realized what he did, and he, you know, backs down and runs out of the house. However, at that point, it was too late, that the wound that Amy suffered was fatal. So again, it's just, you know, here they are, everybody enjoying the holidays. We've all been there. Get together with your family, your friends, your relatives, and start talking about things in the past. And then sometimes some of these family events that
get heated.
Yeah, it gets a little heated, you know, and... This one went a little too far, and somebody pulled out the gun and decided to shoot somebody over an old argument. So,
mine get heated over card games.
Is it over card games?
Yeah.
Because someone's cheating?
It can be.
I know, or some of your families listen, so you gotta be careful.
I do. Some people just get mad because they lose.
Yeah.
That makes them mad.
And they get upset and walk out, huh? Some people get upset because I eat the last of the certain food I like at mine, and they want to know why I didn't save it for them, and I say, too bad.
Too bad, so sad.
Once a year I get to eat this food, so First come, first get.
It's the way it should be.
Absolutely. All
right. You done with that one?
I'm done with that one.
All right. So we got time for one more?
Yeah, you do.
I think we do.
Yeah.
All right. All right. So I'm going to talk about the Charlie Lawson murders, and I'm going to go back a ways too, to 1929. And this happened just before Christmas. Charlie Lawson, who apparently had a very large family, his wife, Fanny, there again, got a couple of Fannies here that we're talking about.
Yeah, you don't really hear that name anymore today.
Not too much nowadays. His children are Marie, 17, Arthur, 16, Carrie, 12, Maybell, 7, James, 4, Raymond, 2, and Mary Lou, 4 months.
Wow. So
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 kids.
So a lot of cold nights in that house.
Yeah, seven kids.
That's a lot of kids. So we know what they were doing. Yeah. They weren't sleeping a lot.
Well, and do the math on Marie 17 and Arthur 16. So
yeah.
So anyway, Charlie's taking his family on what was described as an uncommonly lavish trip to buy new outfits. I'm assuming they didn't have a ton of money, especially with
seven kids.
That many kids. So they needed these new outfits because they were going to take a family portrait. The problem is that the new outfits that they bought would turn out to be burial clothes for everyone. So on Christmas Day, this is when Charlie Lawson begins slaughtering his whole family.
So wait. So this is not a cheerful Christmas. Dark again.
I'm ending on, yeah, this which will probably be our last one. I'm ending dark.
Nice.
So he starts shooting up his whole family with the shotgun. He shoots Carrie and Maybell first, and then starts to go after his wife. The boys, they all tried to hide as soon as they hear the shots. And Maurice is screaming. But eventually, he finds them all, and he kills every one of them. Even the poor little four-month-old Mary Lou.
Jeez.
Maybe we should have ended with one of your funny ones.
Yeah.
So there was one survivor, and that was Arthur, 16, who was not there. He returned to the farm, or he escaped and went and got a police officer, and they returned to the farm to find out that his father, Charlie, had committed suicide. Probably the craziest part of this story that I had read was the motive, right? So on some of these other ones, we've kind of maybe known the motive. Some of them, we really didn't know as much about it. In this one, it was alleged, and I'll say alleged, even though this is 1929, so I don't think it matters, but it was alleged that Charlie and his eldest daughter, Marie, had been having an incestuous affair. It's a hard word to say. That's hard.
I can't say it.
Yeah, it's hard to think about.
I can't.
I wasn't asking you to try either.
Yeah, that's good. I can't even say Illinois right.
Right. So a friend of Marie's, and again, Marie is the 17-year-old daughter, even claimed that Marie told her she was pregnant with Charlie's baby.
Wow.
Her own father's baby. And both Charlie and his wife knew all about it. So the theory is that either Charlie was so ate up with guilt, or he was so unwilling to be a dad to this child that he was going to be having with his 17-year-old daughter, that he didn't know what else to do, and he just snaps and he slaughters the whole family. Either way, I mean, the reason why I wanted to do this one last is that, you know, it probably goes down as one of the most heinous Christmas murders, because keep in mind, this happened actually on Christmas. This is probably one of the most heinous murders in United States history.
So
on Christmas.
He wasn't happy, so he decides to take out the whole family and then himself, instead of just taking himself out and letting the family live their own lives.
Well, I've never understood that, right? We've seen that in a lot of news or media stories where somebody went on a rampage and they killed a bunch of people and then killed themselves.
Sure, your first story.
Yeah.
Was that?
Yeah.
Right?
Why not just kill yourselves and be done with it?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not advocating that anybody should commit suicide.
Well.
But if your plan is to go out and kill a large number of people and you know you're ultimately going to kill yourself.
Just take care of yourself.
Yeah. I don't get that. I mean, is it fame? Is it not? Obviously not in 1929.
No.
He wasn't looking for fame, but.
Which is even strange for 1929. I'm even thinking, you know, you're better with a shotgun than I am, but I'm just thinking how fast you had to be with a shotgun back in 1929 to go around the house to shoot the wife and seven kids. Yeah, one got away, but still, I mean, you'd have to be pretty good with a shotgun.
Well, I guess it depends on what.
And corral them all to make sure you can get it off. And I think
if there's a double barrel, I mean.
Yeah, and I'm sure the kids were shocked, too, that they weren't scattering, running. They just probably were shocked what was happening.
Well, it said they tried to hide, and of course, he found them, and they were probably pretty easy targets.
So not very good at hide and seek then.
So yeah, sorry to end it on such a downer. You got to have one. You got something?
Something to
go out on a.
I
you wish you did.
I wish
but
I
you
did.
Don't. You don't have another giant Christmas weed tree story.
I wish I. I can't even finish the sandwich now.
All right, Gibby. So we wanted to do just kind of a hodgepodge of Christmas stories for people. You know, they didn't have to pay too close attention to. They could listen to on their newly unwrapped gifts. But we definitely wanted to get a Christmas episode out, and we wanted to definitely tell all of our listeners that we wish them a very Merry Christmas and
Happy Holidays.
Yep. Happy Holidays. And again, how unbelievably grateful we are for the number of people that have been listening to this show. It's beyond, I think either of our, we couldn't have imagined that it would take off this quickly. So again, thank you very much.
And send us a message. Let us know how your holiday went.
Yeah, definitely. We love the interaction.
Absolutely.
Those of you that have been interacting with us on Twitter and Facebook, you know that we're very responsive. Email. We got an email from a gentleman in Ireland.
Yeah.
The other day, which I just thought was amazing.
It was pretty cool.
And I think he ended it up with, keep up the good job, lads.
Yeah.
And I was doing it in my head with an Irish brogue.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Just to think we're out in Ireland.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty cool.
So for Mike and Gibby, we really want to wish you a Merry Christmas. And I'll say stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
I understand that anybody who's paid attention to the media would have to come to the conclusion that I killed my wife.
Hi, my name is Zach Stewart Pontier. I'm one of the filmmakers behind The Jinx, and I'm excited to bring you the official Jinx podcast. We'll be revisiting all six episodes of Part 1 and watching along with Part 2 as it airs on Max, starting April 21st.
Bye-bye.
The official Jinx podcast. Listen on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.